Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Glory Glory Man United podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Quinn, and join me today to analyse another abysmal defeat is Reese from the Weekly Steel Chair. How's it going, Reese?
All good, thanks. My camera decided to play up a little bit, but thanks for having me. It's been 2 years, I believe you told me. That's how long it's been since I was last on here. It was quite a conversation we had. Funnily enough, I do remember it, even though it was 2 years ago. I do remember it fondly. So it's nice to be back on. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay in my personally, but in terms of being a Manchester United fan, I'm pretty miserable at the moment. Yeah, like we all are. But yeah, I think it was October 2021 you were last on, which is hard to believe. And Solskjaer was still Manchester United's manager at that point. That's how long ago that it was. We've had two managers since then.
We have indeed. We have indeed.
And we could soon be having another one.
At this stage, it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, because United have had 13 defeats this season already. That's the most by Christmas by Manchester United for 93 years. A goal difference of -5. And we've only scored 18 goals in our first 18 Premier League games, and that is level with Luton Town. It's absolutely horrific. And I think Ten Hag is fortunate that the club are in disarray behind the scenes, which means that there's nobody really to sack him. I mean, the temporary CEO is a lawyer who's going to be moving out of his post as soon as Radcliffe comes in, so he's not going to sack him. And I agree with what Ben Smith has been saying here on Twitter. He says, I'm so fed up with the constant, it's the owners, it's the recruitment, it's the structure. He's been given $400 million to spend on Onana, Martinez, Malacia, Casemiro, Eriksen, Amrabat, Mount, Anthony, Hoyland, and his team are dreadful. The owners and the structure don't pick the team or the tactics. Recruitment hasn't been good enough and the Glazers are cancerous. But this idea you stick with the man in situ simply because of the problems above him, when there's absolutely nothing to suggest progress is being made, it's laughable. He's feeling miserably. How do you see it, Reese?
I think that's a fair statement to make. The one thing that I particularly don't like, I don't know about you, mate, but we've both done content creating for quite some time, whether it be myself, football or wrestling. I still have an engagement with football, yourself, like football specifically. Like, the one thing I don't like is the disarray amongst our fan base when it comes to just asking a simple question. Like, there's nothing, this is what I don't understand. We see it all the time in other fan bases where, let's use an example. Let's use Chelsea, because it pretty much all, in terms of the Premier League era, it all stemmed from Chelsea when it comes to sacking managers because they have no other option because they feel like the manager's failing. Sacking a manager because it'll lead to success. And Chelsea have done that all the way through. And they've proven that it works. But they got that from Real Madrid. We all know that. It came from Real Madrid for a reason. They're that good at it. They're the masters of it. When you've got a fan base who are understandable that success doesn't always come with the same manager, you might have to make a change and bite the bullet. Then you've got to ask the question of, why bite the bullet straight away? Do you look at our fan base where it's always about giving time? And I understand that. I think getting rid of somebody straight away is a major issue. I think you should be given a little bit of time, even just to try and get point across, try and get things in your vision, try and get the team to play how you want to play and make it consistent. However, the question really is, how much time can one person afford? Now, I see this all the time with the Man United fans online, and that's fine, including myself, where I've responded to a few times. But it's always a question of, how much time do you give someone? I always think a manager should be able to understand their squad and their first team within the first 18 months. I think 18 months is sufficient to get a style of play across and also find out who is actually important to your side and who theoretically you should be trying to move on. If you don't know your best 11, you cannot get your style of play across in 18 months, then questions rightfully then should be asked. by that time, you've had three transfer windows. You've got summer, January, summer again. By the time it gets to your fourth window, which is the second January transfer window, you should be able to at least say, I might need one or two, but I need to get rid of, say, X, Y, and Z, because they are not committed. They're not committed to the squad. They're not going to do anything. They're just taking up a shirt number and they're just taking up wages when we could have used on somebody else. By that point, you also see bad eggs in the dressing room showcase themselves. And we've seen it consistently by managers, the biggest managers in the game, some that are relatively inexperienced, some of them have been out the game club scene for years, have been consistently overdone, overruled, and stepped on by players who are getting paid big money to consistently play shite for over a decade. Now, is Jose Mourinho right now the best manager in football? No. Was Jose Mourinho the best manager in football? 100%. But at the time when he got sacked, he was responsible for some of his own demise. And he was responsible for not all of it. Right now, Ten Hag, last year, I'll bet he had a good season, I think. I'll give him that. I think he had a good season last year in his first campaign. There was a lot of defeats that relatively shouldn't have happened. But you're getting two cup finals where you're winning one of them. You win, obviously, you win the first trophy in six seasons. You finish third in your first league campaign when you were injury barren, where you lost a lot of key players. But then you get to the second season and you're expecting things to push up. And instead it's fall flat. At the moment, if you're a new potential owner that's looking at what needs to change, Ten Hag at the moment, based on this season, has no right to say, I deserve a chance to stay. Because the results have not justified at all. If he's able to turn that round, then rightfully so, he deserves to stay under the new under a new owner. But at the moment, if you're looking at it from an unbiased perspective, he has no stake in his name to say he deserves to stay. That's what I think personally. I hope he doesn't get sacked, but I think something should be questioned upon in the right way that doesn't have a fan base chomping down your neck. We don't need to be a divisive fan base over a simple question. It's just how you justify your answer.
Yeah, it's almost taboo among United fans to call for a manager to be sacked. And at the moment, that's a perfectly valid opinion. I can see today, even just looking at social media, that the numbers of fans who want to see Ten Hag go is increasing. And with every defeat, that's going to be the case. If we get absolutely slapped, if we get slapped by Aston Villa, the number's going to increase again. Another damn indictment of Ten Hag is his former players that are at West Ham, who are far and away outperforming the players that played with him at Ajax or other clubs that he's brought with him to Old Trafford. I mean, Mohamed Kudus cost a half of what Anthony cost. And look how well he's doing, and Anthony's doing absolutely nothing. That's a pretty damning indictment on Ten Hag's decision making, isn't it?
It is, because when you look at how the team is structured, we all knew prior to Anthony signing that he's not a stats guy. Like, I think the most he ever got in a season goals wise was 6 goals, so he's not going to get you 20 goals a season if you want a goal-scoring winger. But he does have some key attributes that are vital in a team. The problem is right now, as a team, we are desperate for creativity and a goal-scoring winger on both sides. And we're not getting that from him, whereas Kudus has given everything in that West Ham team. And fair play to him, because he is delivering fantastically. And it's tailor-made for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I knew it. You know, we spent 86 million on Anthony. I wish we'd have spent it on Jared Bowen that's probably what West Ham would have charged us. And, you know, we would have got obviously more value if we'd assigned him. You know, there was just, if I was the coach and the club had to pay 86 million to bring in one of my former players, I'd have said, listen, he's not worth that. That's too much. We'll pull the plug on that one. Because if it doesn't work out, the manager's going to get the blame. And it hasn't worked out. And to me, Ten Hag and Anthony come as a pair. I don't see a situation where Anthony fails and Ten Hag succeeds. And he's going to keep playing him in every single game in the hope that it works out, because he needs it to work out. And that's going to be to the detriment of results. But of course, Anthony's not the only one. There were so many poor performances. It's another issue, another mistake that Ten Hag made today specifically was the midfield selection. Now, I thought after Anfield, he should have kept with Manu alongside Amrabat, even though Amrabat is not far from perfect, because it gives us a solid base.
Yeah.
And it would allow Bruno to have a free role, basically. But you cannot play Bruno and Fernandes together. Obviously, Bruno is the much more talented player, but they both want to do the same thing. They both want to get into the box, either score goals or in Bruno's case, get an assist. So I really can't get my head around Ten Hag breaking up that midfield duo from Anfield. I mean, McTominay might be good for an occasional goal, but he is a really, really poor midfielder. You know, if he's there to score goals, he should be playing up front. You need your midfield to be midfielders, and I think that was a poor selection today.
Yeah, I think that particularly was a wrong choice. I think circumstance being that I know he's just came back from injury, but immediately I'm also playing Eriksen in midfield, because I don't think we have an option from a deeper position to actually create. That's something I've always been consistently annoyed with regarding team selection, is in the summer we signed Mason Mount, and fair enough, but I've never always been big on Mason Mount. I think personally we should have signed a player who can create from deeper positions. Like, we spent all last summer trying to sign Frenkie de Jong, if that was even the whole intention. Why didn't we go looking for another deeper playmaker like that? Like, that's what we really were missing all along. But I feel like we're unsure. And it says a lot as well that if we were going to sign a number 10 that was English, why didn't we sign James Maddison?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think we really let it down where Tottenham actually got the better deal. And I think that's another indictment of the fact is, like, I don't mind the manager signing players that he's familiar with, but it shouldn't be all the time. We should have a strong sense of technical fluidity, but also physical presence in the team. And we're just signing too many technical players with no physical presence. We should be signing technical players that have a physical presence, that are actually going to be reliable in matches. And you mentioned Scott McTominay. Scott McTominay, obviously playing for Scotland, enjoys himself that much that he does get goals, but he also does a job. But he's still an average player. I would still rather have Anthony Gordon and the young lads from Leicester, who funnily enough went to Newcastle.
Barnes?
That's it. I would rather have them in the Scotland squad and their targets for Scotland than Scott McTominay. I don't trust McTominay enough for United, because he does have so many moments where he does go missing. And when we really need him the most, he isn't there. But when we don't need him, he pops up. Like, we didn't need him versus Chelsea, and he still got two goals. But when we need him in a game against Liverpool, he's nowhere to be found. So, that's something that genuinely bugs me. And today especially, like, the goal that we conceded, that goal where it was the error from Johnny Evans' pass, and mine who was just caught ball watching, that's an experience and that's not his fault. But Scott McTominay's, what, 10, 15 yards ahead of him? I'm like, why are you so far forward? Like, that's something that really bugs me. Like, that inexperience of a player who has to immediately change their game and try to save something when they're going to get lambasted by your online fans. Like, that's something that he doesn't need to happen. He doesn't deserve that shit. But that's a situation that we're at right now. Like, that's another 18, 19-year-old who's going to be hated by our online fan base because they made one simple mistake that led to a really good goal by West Ham, fed by another beautiful Paqueta assist. Like, that's something that personally pisses me off.
Yeah, Kobe Manu miscontrolled or took his eye off the ball, but like you say, McTominay's his midfield partner, and he was in the other half of the pitch. So,
exactly.
Also, for the first goal, I think McTominay should close down Paqueta, and he doesn't. He plays a lovely ball over the top to Jared Bowen. Shaw can't make the challenge because if he doesn't get the ball, it's a penalty. I think Onana was a bit suspect as well. I mean, he gets a hand on it, and then it goes straight back out to Bowen and hits him and goes in. Not the worst mistake that Onana's made, but it certainly wasn't great, in my opinion.
Agreed. I'll say another thing as well. I didn't realise this, but it was announced by, it was confirmed by Alan McCoist. Paqueta's now assisted the last 5 West Ham goals in a row. But that says a lot.
Yeah, and it says that they have far more creative players than we do, and better forwards than we do. Our front line is just they couldn't score in a brothel. I know it sounds crude, but I mean, it's the best way of describing it. We could still be playing right now, and we still wouldn't have scored.
Was it Areola, the West Ham goalkeeper? If you just had Areola on his own and 11 Man United players playing against him, he would be there happily chilled. He'd probably be drinking cups of coffee. Like, that's generally how bad we were in front of goal. But we could just chill and he wouldn't get the ball put past him.
Yeah, the chance that Garnacho had one-on-one was... He should have buried that. I think he almost tripped himself up. He got his legs a bit tangled, and then he went near post instead of the far post, which I would have expected. And just an easy save for the goalkeeper. Probably, other than that, the closest we came to score was when the goalkeeper nearly fumbled a long-range effort from Manu. It was shades of De Gea at West Ham last season, that one. But unfortunately for us, it didn't go in. It just went wide of the post. But you know, what's pretty galling is that United were actually the better team up until West Ham's first goal, I thought. We should have went in 1-0 up at half-time, but we're just so toothless in front of goal. I think we were allowed to dominate possession because every time Moyes plays against Manchester United, he shows us far too much respect. He sets off us, invites us on, and hopes to score on the counter or from a set-piece. If West Ham actually played their football, which they have been doing in recent weeks, they'd have absolutely blown us away. But I don't understand why Moyes shows United so much respect. We're an awful team. We're mid-table fodder. They should have absolutely destroyed us today, I felt.
I think what's interesting is his entire record against Man United since he actually got sacked, let alone his record against big teams, it isn't the best record, David Moyes. But that today is probably his biggest, most commanding win against a top Premier League side. And rightfully so. Like, we aren't acting like a top Premier League side, but we are, by history and by name, a top Premier League side, top football side. And today, they really gave us a good kicking in that last 28 minutes, like 30 minutes. We got a real good kicking. I think even David Moyes knew coming to this game, look, they've just had a 0-0 draw at Anfield. We're expecting Man United to be a little bit shook that maybe they got a draw that they didn't expect to get. But we still have the quality in our squad that if we are still in this game by the 60-minute mark, if we are not far behind or if it's still 0-0, we're going to make a change, we're going to tweak a few things, and we're just going to go for it. And we saw that, and I think it was Alan McCoy that said it was spot on. The minute they made that late change and then they put Paqueta into the false nine role, that was it. The minute he went false nine, we had no way of stopping him. He was already great in that game, but he wasn't like, he was still getting passes through, but he wasn't getting that penetrative pass. But the minute he had his position changed, all of a sudden we could see those passes that Paqueta's renowned for in that West Ham team. And it's like, why were we not prepared? And I thought David Moyes had his team set up spectacularly today. I thought they were brilliant back to front. They were happy to set off. They were happy to let Man United control the ball because we weren't playing the ball kind of from back to front through the final third. We weren't creating enough to suggest that we were going to score. And another thing that's really annoying me at the moment with Ten Hag is Højlund is expected to be our long-term number nine. He's still struggling to score in the league. But when we really need a goal from a striker, you want to try and give him as much confidence as you can. So what do? You bring him off? Like, yeah. I know he hasn't scored, but I would have kept Højlund on. I would have taken off Rashford or even Garnacho. Like, I don't care who comes off, but, like, when you look at the... No, sorry, it was Rashford that came on. I would have taken Garnacho off. I would have kept Højlund on. But I don't think we really set up specifically for Højlund to score. But also, Højlund isn't helping himself when Højlund isn't getting those positions where he can have the ball, where he can just attack a defence. It's not suiting him as a striker, and we're not suited to him as a striker. It's a complete loss-loss situation instead of what we'd hoped to be a win-win.
Yeah, I've seen situations today where the ball's crossed into the middle about 5 yards ahead of him, and you know it's not really giving him a chance to get on the end of it. I've noticed in recent games he's being out-muscled by really physical centre halves. He's struggling to hold the ball up now. That's another thing about Garnacho. He's been physically manhandled off the ball too. I know he's a very small, slight lad, and you know he's a winger, and his main attribute is his skill and his pace, but probably needs to bulk up a wee bit, you know, like Ronaldo did when he was young, because he's been out-muscled, you know, far too easily. And Højlund as well, probably. Højlund has had opportunities this season to break his duck in the Premier League, and he hasn't taken them. Luton really springs to mind. He had two golden chances in that game. But at the same time, the service is just non-existent. Anthony, I don't know where to even begin with him. He's just such a, I think it was Mick McCarthy who said, I wouldn't have him in any team. That guy's not a footballer, and I wouldn't have him anywhere near my team. He's just so one-dimensional. He doesn't have any pace. His only trick is to cut in and shoot into the far corner with his left foot. He never uses his right foot. He doesn't go down the line and you know cross it in with his right. He's just so predictable and gives the ball away time and time again. And like I said, he has no pace either. And when you have these two inverted wingers, it doesn't help Højlund. Garnacho does try to cross the ball rather than shooting all the time, but Anthony in particular, he's only looking to have a shot. And the fullbacks not really getting many crosses into the middle either. So, yeah, Bruno is really off his game at the moment. So there's no Harry Kane would probably struggle in this team at the moment. That's how bad we are.
Probably would. I think what we really need to look at is if the manager really is persistent with Anthony, and I like Anthony, I think Anthony's a good player, but he does have a lot of issues with his game. The one-footedness definitely is something that I'm not a fan of. But what I think they might persist with him is Ten Hag just goes a little bit old school. And he stops persisting with these inverted wingers and just play, if anything, just switch them round. Just put Garnacho on the right hand, just put Garnacho on the right hand side and put Anthony on the left. If he's only going to use his left foot, then let him use the left foot, because at least he'll get a more pinpoint cross with his left from that left side. He's more favoured. If he's having to constantly run up to the top of the touchline, where he is a hard working player, he'll run up and down the field. But it's not helpful if you're running up and down the field. You then have to stop 2 yards to cut back to then make a pass or even try and hit a cross. And it's not going to be accurate because you've already got a defence back in shape. At least in that sense, if he's playing the left wing, at least he can get a more accurate time for a cross. If not, then he really needs to be told, right, you need to start using that right foot. And every time you don't use your right foot, just fine him. just keep fighting him every time he doesn't use his right foot, because eventually it'll get stuck in his head. If I don't use my right foot, I'm gonna get punished. It might sound a little bit crude to punish a player for not using their other foot, but there's other players that are not great with their weak foot, but they'll still at least try. He very rarely, if not, doesn't do it. And I'm like, I would just fine him. Fine him like a week's wages. Just go for it. Like, if you're not going to hit, every time you do not hit, well, a cross or a pass with your right foot, whether you get paid a week, that's how much you're getting fined. I would just do it. And if anything, it'll force the other players to go, actually, hold on, we really need to step up as well. Accountability.
Yeah, another thing annoyed me about Albany is that in the tunnel before the game, you know, he's having a laugh and a joke with the West Ham players. I think it was at half time he's walking off with Jared Bowen. They're having a laugh and a joke. It's like United losing doesn't really matter to him. And you could say that about a lot of players. It's been a real common trait in recent seasons. But there has been the odd rare occasion where Anthony has shifted to the left hand side over the course of the last year and a half. Like, I'm talking about like 10-minute spells in games. And he has provided the odd decent ball into the middle. Now, I know like this hasn't been for any lengthy period of time, him playing in that position, but that is something to consider. Yes, let's play traditional wingers and have a right-footed player on the right and a left-footed player on the left. But Ten Hag is so wedded to this 4-3-3 or whatever it is. Is it 4-2-3-1 with the inverted wingers? It's how he's always played, you know, even before he came to United, and he never changes it.
Yeah,
he's very, very predictable. So you're not the first person who suggested that on this show, but I just don't see Ten Hag doing that.
I would only persist with inverted wingers if it's two-footed inverted wingers.
Yeah.
That's the only way I would persist with it. If you're not two-footed, then don't play them.
We did have a two-footed inverted winger, and he's now playing for Getafe.
That is true.
And I was watching, it was a YouTube video called Ollie's Pandemic Reds, and it's all the highlights.
I think I've seen that. It's becoming a top search video right now. Weirdly enough.
Yeah. It was during the when football restarted after the pandemic, you know, it was about June 2020, and United for months after that were playing some sublime football in the empty stadiums, and Greenwood was a big part of that. He was scoring goals with his left foot, his right foot. He's getting assists with both feet. And when you watch that, and then you watch how he's playing at the moment for Getafe, and we're stuck with Anthony, who was effectively his replacement, it's painful, isn't it? It's really, really painful, because Greenwood is three or four times the player than Anthony is. He is a very high ceiling. Unfortunately, we might never see him again at Old Trafford because of matters that supposedly happened off the pitch. But it's a real shame, because quality footballers like that don't come around too often. And especially as we're struggling to score goals. That's actually another stat I forgot to mention. We haven't scored in any of our last four games. That's appalling, isn't it?
Yeah. Goals are few and far between at the moment for United, and it's worrying that when we don't score, if anything, we should be trying to like ensure that we don't concede, but we don't even defend well either. So we're, as a whole collective, we're just back to front, but it's just not good to watch. And I compared watching United today to a chore. Because if anything, I've never felt like that before watching United. I've never felt like this is a chore. I've always felt like it's always fun to watch the team I support. And it, good or bad performance, you always want to just feel great watching your team play. And today, for the first time, I compared it to being like, it's like a chore. And it's because I don't see anything, truthfully, that gives me an indication that things are going to get better. With this current manager, if we get a different manager, I don't see anything changing. And that stems from so many issues above board and issues that are on the field, where these players just, they're happy to just get their wages because they know one way, shape or another, they don't have to do anything. Like, the bare minimum doing the basics to them is, to them, it's like a criminal offence. Like, they are incapable of doing the basics properly. And they're happy with that because they know they're still going to get paid thousands of pounds to waste people's time, because they know one way, shape or form they're going to get paid. So they can lose by some big margin, or they could get an impressive win. Then after that, they revert to type. Like, they are... How they get away with it at this club, I have got no clue. But what annoys me the most is there's no one there to just take accountability, even on the field as a player, where you're thinking, there's some bad eggs in this team. Why is nobody stepping up and just pulling them aside and just saying, are you committed to this football club, yes or no? If so, if you're committed, fucking show on the field. If you're not committed, go and ask for a transfer request. I don't see any accountability on the field from a player, let alone getting across from the manager. And it's always the same like joke tweet, oh, United have been outworked again, so they're going to go and run 10K. These players would gladly run 10K just to get paid. It's not going to change anything until there's accountability.
I felt today, you know, watching the game, and it's just my opinion, that they're just a team of individuals. I don't think they're taking the manager seriously anymore. I don't think they take Bruno as captain seriously. You see him barking out orders to people, and they're just ignoring him. And Bruno doesn't really... I don't think he's a good captain at all. I think he's got worse since he became captain. I don't think he's a good example.
I think he's a brilliant player, but in terms of like a leader, he's not somebody I would follow in the battle. If I was to play good football, I would definitely play with the guy. He's a good player. But in terms of like as a captain, his personality, it's not the right fit. He's in situations where you really need a captain. It shouldn't be a captain that acts immediately off emotion. We see that a lot in football games where he is emotion first before thinking. And if he was more head first then emotion, he would be taken more serious, I think, as a captain.
Yeah, he gets very emotional very quickly. I mean, the yellow card that he got today, it was a clear foul. He was tugging the guy two or three times, and then he threw another strop when he got the yellow card. You know, just get on with the game. Like, he was still talking to the referee a minute later. And that's the reason why I don't want him as captain of the football club. One of my mates even suggested that we should give it back to Harry Maguire. That's how little he thinks of Bruno as captain.
But I don't it think seems... there's anyone we've got as a captain. I don't think anyone in that squad is captain material.
You could say Martinez. I think in the future he might get it. But yeah, you're correct.
Maybe against that.
Yeah, there's not many to choose from, really. Like, you could say Casemiro, but I mean, I don't think he's going to be there very long. He might have only 6 months left at the club. And
he's
Varane,
a good player, but he's not reliable. They're the same. They're both good players, but they're not reliable at all.
Yeah, Casemiro's looked a shadow of the player he was last season. I hope that he can get back to his best when he returns from injury, but age might have caught up with him. But yeah, there's very few leaders in this team. They're just playing for themselves. And even Rashford, when he came off the bench, just having that shot from 30 yards and went a mile over the crossbar. What's he doing shooting from there? It's just arrogance to me.
I heard as well. I didn't really see it. I might have missed it, but a few folk have said that when Rashford came off at the end of the game, he didn't even acknowledge the fans. Apparently he didn't acknowledge any of the fans today, but he put at the end of the match. And I'm like, you're meant to be like this whole Manc born and bred thing. Like, I personally hate that phrase, Manc born and bred. Like, you can be, it doesn't matter where you come from. If you play for Man United, if you're a Man United fan, that's all that matters. But like, I don't care if you win 7-0, lose 7-0, as the saying goes, you always go over to your fans, whether it be the home, like whether it be a home game or away game, you always clap the fans, you always acknowledge them. And you just move on. The fact that he didn't do it today as well, apparently really pisses me off. Like, that's another thing where, like, it's the player FC thing where they'll defend these players left, right and centre, saying, oh, but why should he have to go up to the fans? But then they'll say to somebody else, like a Harry Maguire, who I've not got a lot of time for Maguire either. I think he's shit, but he actually has worked hard in recent games. I'll give him that. But he won't go over to the fans, for example. And then they'll have a go at him saying, why is he not going to the fans? But then they'll be hypocritical by doing the same thing for their own player. Because to them, their own favourite player cannot do any wrong. And I think that's another thing I hate about fan bases, in particular ours, is the whole player FC thing. Because that really stems the issue of, are you really a fan of the football club? Or are you a fan of the players? I've got no issue of a football fan saying, oh, I've got a favourite player. But at least being able to call that favourite player out. Now, I've always said that my favourite player of all time is David Beckham. But when he left Man United, did I become a Real Madrid fan? No. Did I become a PSG fan or an LA Galaxy fan? No. I did get an LA Galaxy shirt bought for me, I won't lie. But I didn't become a fan of those clubs, but I've always been a fan of his. But I could always criticise when there was games where he was shit. I think that's something I don't like from the current crop of fans nowadays, where it's they'll defend the fans, like they'll defend the players more, when frankly it should be a collective criticism that is important, but also praise where praise is due.
Yeah, you have to be able to criticize even the players that you love the most. You mentioned David Beckham there. I mean, United set pieces are simply woeful now. I can't remember the last time we scored directly from a free kick. We hardly ever score from corners. And you take me back to an era where with David Beckham, having a free kick was like having a penalty. His corners and his crossing, his deliveries are absolutely immense. He would cross the ball not onto like Van Nistelrooy's head, but where Van Nistelrooy should be. You know, the accuracy was absolutely pinpoint. Yeah, I mean, I was a youngster. He was one of my favorite players as well.
I've always compared David Beckham to a trained sniper in the army. Where if you really needed that kill shot from 600 yards, you always get that one sniper who you know was going to get the shot. I've always thought David Beckham for a pinpoint cross was like that. If you're looking for that kill, David Beckham's going to deliver the kill.
Yeah, when you think of you think of the United front six, you know, from 99, 2000, 2001, when was it Beckham, Keane, Scholes, Giggs, York and Cole? You compare that with what we watch today. It's just like night and day, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and if you put those six players, funnily enough, in our team now, at their current age, we would be in the top three. Now I know that might sound crazy. I know that sounds crazy. Saying, why would they say York and Cole, who are in their 50s, well, 40s, 50s, and why would they say a 50-year-old, like 50 in his 50s, Roy Keane, he's in his 50s, David Beckham and Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes? Why would they say that? Because they're actually professionals that play hard, work hard, and they will never let themselves be compromised by stupid performances. They know if a bad performance happens, they just get on with it. They work hard in training, they move on. Our current players are like, if they have a sad performance, it's immediately on Twitter or Instagram or whatever. Like, oh, we're sorry. We didn't mean for this to happen. We need to do better. There's a need to do better and there's an actual proving the point. If you're going to do better, actually just do it. None of our fans have got any time for these bullshit apologies. If you're sorry, just show it. Those players wouldn't say sorry. They would just show they're sorry if they've made a mistake. I think that's a massive difference between the current game and the game we had from 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and all the pally, you know, handshakes and hugs in the tunnel, you know, when Roy Keane watches that now, you know, it makes him squirm. But yeah, you mentioned Rashford earlier and his attitude. Look at him this season. He has the attitude of Ronaldo when things aren't going well, but none of the output of Ronaldo. You know, yeah. Ronaldo can get away with not applauding fans or throwing a strap or not running back because he's scoring so many goals a season. You know, he's banging them. Even at United at the age of 36, 37, he scored 24 goals. People can let him away with those things. But Rashford has done absolutely nothing this season. He got a goal at back in the start of September at the Emirates. It was a consolation goal. And then he was gifted a penalty by the captain at Everton. Other than that, he's done nothing this season. Yet he's strolling around like he's a superstar. I just don't get it. And I wouldn't have expected this 3 years ago. You remember, he was the local boy who was getting all the praise for, you know, overturning government legislation by using his social media presence to put pressure on them. And he was in good form back then as well. And even last season, he got 30 goals. This season, he just looks like a guy who just doesn't care, doesn't give a toss. Why is that?
I honestly question the same thing, because the one thing that is consistent about a player, like, if you're getting that amount of goals, and even like the numbers he was getting is that for a creative sense as well, when you get those numbers, first Man United player since Van Persie to score 30 goals in a season, you're thinking, okay, surely this man's now going to step up and he's going to consistently get these numbers for the club where we really need him. He's supposed to be the club's main forward, whether it be from the left-hand side or if he's playing down the middle. He's supposed to be our main man. And you've got somebody who understands the club because they were born in that Manchester area, been at the club since he was like 7 or 8 years old. You would think of anybody that would never down tools, who would never show that kind of bad attitude, the first player that you would never think of is Marcus Rashford. He would be way, way down the list. But the fact that he's went from 30-odd goals and assist contributions, like all that, like 30 plus, to a couple this year, like this season alone, is frightening, because he's also on that new big contract. Now, if he's doing what I think he's doing, and I hope I'm wrong, he's doing exactly what Aubameyang did at Arsenal, where he had that amazing last season, then he got the big contract, and then the numbers went straight down because he's like, big money, mate. I'm the Arsenal captain, big money. What are they going to do? They're not going to get rid of me. Rashford, the way he's playing, he doesn't deserve to be a Man United player. Like, the way he's acting, he should be playing for a Luton Town. Like, no disrespect to Luton or all that, but he's acting like a player from a club that's been promoted, not a club who is at the top level of English and world football. That's how he's acting to me. And if this is it, if he'd done that any other top club where it's not, where behaviour like that isn't tolerated, he would be out of a contract. Like, if he'd done that at Bayern Munich, if he'd done that at potentially at PSG, even though they're not really a top club, if he'd done that at any of the big three Italian clubs, if he'd done that at Madrid, Barca or Atletico, even a City or a Liverpool, if he was at either one of those clubs, he would be without a contract. They would bin him because they're like, we can't have attitude like that. But that's the sort of attitude that hampers our dressing room. That's the sort of attitude that brings our club into disarray. Do I think Rashford's a top professional? I do. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player, but I think he can become a great player. But that attitude in him, whatever that may be, that has to go. If he does not get rid of that attitude, if an offer comes in for him in the summer, I would take it. For me, he's got between now and the summer to prove himself. Again, he's got to prove himself again, where he shouldn't have to. He should be consistently delivering based on that season he had last year that was great. He should still be delivering. And if he doesn't deliver between now and the end of the season, the club should bite the bullet and just take whatever they get. If an offer for 60-odd million comes in for him, take it.
Yeah, and we know that his brother has already in the past, you know, had talks with PSG. He went to Paris to speak with them. So they've had a long-standing interest. So especially if Mbappe leaves to go to Real Madrid, they could, you know, reignite that interest. And if they make United a big offer, I would definitely consider it, because he is far too flaky. I know he had a superb season last season, but if I remember correctly, He had a very poor season the season before. The Ranić Solskjaer season, I think Rashford had very poor numbers in that season, and now he's even worse in this campaign. And he does look like a player that's in a very strong position, like Aubameyang, where he's got a big, long contract, and he knows it's going to be difficult to get rid of him. He's on big money. But that's not what you expect from one of your academy prospects. You'd expect that from an overseas player.
I'd expect from a Casemiro, for example, even though he's a veteran, he understands the game. But if Casemiro down tools for that same reason, I'd understand it. Because he'd be like, well, I've seen this shit, I want out. But as you said, somebody like Rashford, you're like, no, you can't be expecting that from someone like him. But that's wrong.
I totally expected it from Pogba. That's what we got from him throughout his 6-year spell at the club. But Rashford, a local boy, it's very, very disappointing that he's behaved like that. So the one very, very slight positive today, and there weren't any other ones, was the debut of Willy Kamwala. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He was the captain of the French under-16s. And I thought he looked really good. He looked very good on the ball. He had a few marauding runs forward. He looked like a competent defender as well. He's physically very strong. And Johnny Evans was probably, with his experience, was probably the perfect partner for him on his debut. And I thought the two of them actually played pretty well today. So Varane once again letting us down, not available. I can understand the manager's frustration with Varane because every time he has a great game or a great couple of games, then he's unavailable for the next match through injury or illness. It's beyond a joke now. It's a farce, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I've always liked Varane, but I'm now starting to wonder what is going on in that circumstance with him, where like he has the capability and he has got the talent as well. He has experienced, he's won so much in the game. You'd be thinking, be like a fulcrum in our defence. He retired from international football just to be more available to Man United. But ever since he did retire, he's played less games. Like, he's just so unavailable, and it's horrific. But like, I thought Kamwala was fantastic in defence. I really liked his performance. I thought he looked very astute on the ball. I thought his passing was actually not too bad as well from a young lad who's making his first step in professional football. I thought that was a great enjoyment to see. Obviously, barring that one error, which happened obviously when the first goal happened, I thought his positioning was great. He was caught out a little bit, but that's because an experienced player is going to really turn him over in that circumstance. But I thought the one thing I really did like today was the fact he was closing down his man really effectively. He was trying to ensure that his defensive position beside Johnny Evans was, if not close to perfect, but perfect. I thought he really showcased that on the field. And I also like the fact that he's just, like, at his age, he's just built like a tank. Like, he's so big, powerful, strong, but he's quick as well. So there's somebody that over the long term could be somebody who could be a long-term stay in our defence. But I just hope in the next game when he does play that he's not starting the game, but he comes off the bench, where I think, like, because he's starting today, there's just like a little bit extra, like, okay, you're making your debut due to numbers and situation. But the next game you come on, let's just see what you can bring in a situation where you're coming off the bench with a little bit less pressure. Let's see what he can bring. But I was very impressed by him. But as for Varane, it's going to end up getting to the point where he will need replaced, because it is his time and appearances for the club this season alone. For somebody, for all the experience in the game and for what he's achieved, not good enough. Not good enough at all.
Yeah, and supposedly he's on $350k a week. Another waste of money. You know, so many players are on 300 plus at United, and we're getting absolutely nothing in return.
I think only three players. I think only three players from like the main players that do play are actually on 300k plus, and that's Rashford, Rashford, Casemiro, Varane.
Okay, what was Bruno on then?
I think Bruno's 280.
I suppose I'm thinking of De Gea. He was on 370 or something like that. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, he was on that thereabouts, yeah. I know Sancho's on 350, but he doesn't play. But that's like somebody who doesn't play, that's a big waste.
Yeah, that's the biggest waste of money of all, in terms of wages and transfer fee.
The sad thing is right now, for a player like Rasmus Højlund, where he really needs creativity, this would be the perfect time for Ten Hag and Sancho just to try and iron out whatever the problem is between those two. A player who actually needs goals like Højlund. I know Sancho's not the perfect player in the world, but Sancho at least will try and create a goal out of nothing.
Yeah, if he's interested.
It looks like that relationship's irreparable, but if it was repairable, there's a right winger right there that could help Rasmus Højlund break that duct.
Yeah, we need to really, instead of trying the same thing in every game, we need to try something different. Ten Hag quite often just keeps trying the same thing over and over again. It's like that old Einstein quote, you know, where it's the definition
of insanity.
Yeah, so just going to do a rundown of the player ratings, which is going to be pretty depressing. Onana, yeah, it would be a 5 for me, and lucky to get it. Didn't cover himself in glory with that first goal. Did make a good save at 0-0. I thought it was going to be a good day for him at that point, but it's not how it turned out. Wan-Bissaka, I think, you know what, the whole back four I thought would all get 6s, really. I don't think they were really bad on the day. And yeah, I think the second goal obviously is a mistake by Manu, and the first goal was just brilliant play, and there's nothing really. I think McTominay should have closed Bacata down, and you know, Shaw couldn't really intervene with Bowen because he'd be risking giving a penalty away. So all 6s, I think. Scott McTominay, very, very poor again. So few passes, creates nothing, passes the ball backwards and sideways. Didn't close down, but we got it down, like I say. Very poor performance. So it would be 4 out of 10 for him. Fortunately, Manu, you said earlier in the pod that he's going to get criticism for what happened, but I wouldn't be too harsh on him given his age and his inexperience. You know, these things will happen. We know he's got the ability to be a sensational player in the future. But I'd say 5 out of 10 today. Bruno, another one of his absolute stinkers, would be a 4 for me. Anthony, very, very poor. Didn't create anything. 3 for Anthony. Garnacho, probably as frustrating as he was in front of goal, and some of his crosses weren't perfect, he's probably our most dangerous player, and I wouldn't have taken him off when Rashford came on. With his new haircut, I'd have taken Anthony off. Played Rashford or Garnacho on the right. It wouldn't really matter. We needed to try something. Anthony was by far probably the poorest between Garnacho and Anthony. I would have taken him off, but we know he's one of the manager's favourites, and you know, because he paid so much money for him, he has to make it work. But so it was predictable. I actually thought he would take Garnacho off for Rashford, but it was Højlund he took off, wasn't it, and bought Rashford on.
It was Højlund, yeah.
Which was surprising, and you mentioned earlier, it's just probably going to kill his confidence now after that sub. So Garnacho, I'll give him a 5. Højlund just feeding off scraps again. But there was one time the ball was played into him, and his control was very poor, and I think it just ran out for a goal kick, I think.
It let him down tremendously.
But yeah, he's just getting no service at all. And so
it was
5
combined,
for Højlund.
It was a combined one pass between Garnacho and Anthony for Højlund today. One pass combined between them both.
That's absolutely brutal. So five for Haaland, but I have to say I feel really sorry for him. It's just United's, when you're a centre forward, United's a very difficult team to be in at the moment. And as I said earlier, even Harry Kane might struggle. He'd probably score more than what Haaland has, but he wouldn't get the Bayern numbers, that's for sure, in this United team. So Rashford, when he came on, abysmal, really, be a three for him. Plessy came on for Anthony then, didn't really have an impact. So probably a five for him. And the other subs are very late. I mean, you mentioned you thought Eriksen should have started. It took him 85 minutes to bring him on for Garnacho.
Yeah.
And I would regular have started.
I think one thing that bugs me as well, though, is I don't know what Palestri needs to do to get games. I think Palestri is an old school winger that we're actually missing in terms of like craning at the box. Like, but when he comes on, he gets very little time to even make a chance. And ironically, he comes on, I'm pretty sure, when Højlund came off. So I'm like, there you go. Like, you're removing an opportunity for a striker from a winger who actually create a cross for him.
Yeah, and he's done that consistently, Ten Hag. Whenever Palacio comes on, Højlund's already off, or he takes him off at the same time. And you're like, yeah, he's the one player that could create a chance for him. And he sabotage.
He's sabotaging his own striker by taking off or bringing on the one winger when he needs it the most.
Yeah, he gave Plessy a few starts back in September, October, but we haven't really seen much of him since then. He gets 10-minute cameos. His cameo against Fulham was crucial to us winning the game. It was tenacity, winning the ball back a couple of times, and then he provided the assist for Bruno. And he quite often, not today, but he quite often does have an impact from the bench. And would like to see more of him. Most fans feel the same, but Ten Hag is just not going to play Plessy over Anthony, because he's his favourite. You know, all managers have their favourites. Reguilón came on for the young centre half. I don't really understand that substitution. And Reguilón, he's just going to go be sent back to Spurs. He hasn't done anything to convince us that he should get a permanent contract, and nowhere near it.
Yeah.
And Ten Hag today, he got it so wrong again. I think United are so slow on the ball. They look short of ideas. The team selection, especially in midfield, was questionable. No goals in this team whatsoever. Yeah, so Ten Hag 2 out of 10, unlucky to get it. And he's on very, very thin ice at the moment. Do you think if we lose to Aston Villa, his goose is cooked?
I think it's certainly possible. Like I said at the very start, like I think like we are. They may not be in place yet, like the likes of Ratcliffe and whoever he's bringing in with him. They're not in place yet, but I guarantee they're still watching Man United play. They'll have to, if they're interested in us as an investment in terms of actually owning the club and taking us forward, they want to improve the sporting side. They have to be paying attention to the club performances itself on the field where it matters. At the moment, Ten Hag had a great first season, but this season it's went backwards. He doesn't have anything to fall back on to say, I deserve to stay. Like, he can't use the Carabao Cup win as ammunition. He can't use third place as an ammunition when we failed in a very easy Champions League group. Like, that, we should have, like, at least 12 points. The only two games that you can theoretically say Man United should not have a chance in is Bayern Munich home and away. We should still be beating Galatasaray and Copenhagen home and away. We didn't even do that. And we spectacularly failed in our defence of the Carabao Cup as well against Newcastle. We failed against them. We let them walk all over us. Ironically, the team we've beaten in the final. The FA Cup game against Wigan, he's still in one competition at least to try and win something. But at the moment, he doesn't have anything to suggest that he is going to stay in the job. He really needs to get results, but he also needs to get his style across quickly as well, because these players are just sticking to what they know best, and that's hampering the squad the long term.
And he still doesn't have an away win against a top nine team in the Premier League, and we're 18 months in now. That's a yeah. shambolic record. Today was a chance to get his first win against a top nine team, and once again failed miserably. And the fact that
we've got Villa next, I have no confidence against Villa right now.
Yeah, I think they'll rock up at Old Trafford and beat us pretty comfortably the way things are going. I wouldn't even back us to beat Forest on the 30th. By the way, did you see that red card for Willy Bully today against...
I don't understand that. That was never a red, in my opinion.
No, he gets the ball.
That's ultimately cost them, because obviously they've conceded at the 94th minute. Like, it's some of the decisions that are going by referees in the game, they've gone backwards.
How can VAR not overturn that?
I honestly don't know. But that was never a red card for me.
Not even close.
Nah. I agree with you. He wins the ball, and he wins the ball with ease. I feel Willy Bully is really harshly done there. He's been harshly treated.
He gets the ball before the other player even appears on camera, and it's not even close.
Yeah.
And the other player actually stands on his ankle. I don't know where the red card, the second yellow for Bully comes in. It's just really rank bad refereeing. These referees are rancid in the Premier League. The standard is, we thought they were bad 20 years ago. They're 10 times worse now. And even with
it's just hilarious where we consistently hear them on TV, or whether it be Amazon Prime games, and they're saying, oh, it's the best league in the world. The best league in the world has the best referees. So that does not mean the Premier League's the best league in the world. It might be the most expensive league in the world, but it doesn't have the best officiating. It's horrific officiating.
Yeah, they really need to start importing the best referees in the world to improve the product. Yeah, I've been saying that for years now. So just coming to a couple of comments here. Simon Davis, who's a Manchester City supporter, he says, United made one mistake only, letting the Glazers buy the club. From then on, it's gone down and down. Well, it obviously wasn't. That was the JP McManus, the Irish tycoons, who sold the club because the disagreement with Ferguson, and they couldn't sack him, obviously, and they wanted to leave then. But it should have been up to the Premier League to block the takeover. How do they meet a fit and proper person's test? They got a £700 million loan to buy the club, so it didn't even use any of their own money. Absolutely absurd. In that case, I could have went and bought United. That's how ridiculous it was. He says, so the solution is to fuck the Glazers off. I'm a City fan, but I'm confident I'm correct. Yeah. If only it was that simple. Anthony is a sunshine player, he says, and he says Daku is a bargain. I cannot disagree with that. That looks like great business, doesn't it?
Daku's been excellent. He's been excellent for them. He's came in like a duck to water in Prem. Fair play to him. Quality player.
And Big T here says Bruno would not start for City or Liverpool. He is overrated and needs to go. Would you be that harsh about it? I don't think so.
No, not particularly, but I do think at some point he'll want to leave, the way the circumstances at the club are going. I think at some point he'll just want to go in general.
Yeah, I think there is the possibility. We've always seen Ronaldo walk out, and winners like Casemiro and Varane probably seeing how the standards are so low at United. There's no winning mentality. The culture is all wrong. And they probably have given up as well, given up the ghost and want to go elsewhere. We've seen rumours today that Varane wants to go back to Real Madrid. I wouldn't be surprised if Casemiro felt the same way. I mean, they're used to a club that their only ambition is to win the Liga and Champions League every season. United is just a commercial enterprise, and winning comes second. and they're probably, you know, not used to that type of environment. And also, they're at Real Madrid, they're used to a dressing room full of winners. At United, like we've talked about during the show, they're just happy to collect their wages and go home again. They don't really care if we lose. They're so friendly with the opposition players. They don't applaud our own fans. They don't run back. And, you know, people like Casemiro probably see that and say, what am I even doing here?
Yeah, I think I would be surprised with Varane going back either, because obviously Real Madrid have got an injury concern at the back. So it makes sense for Varane to go back there as well, where he knows he can get into the team quite quickly. And if he stays performing well, he stays in the team. I think Casemiro as well, I think he sees the writings on the wall. I think he's like, this isn't what I signed up for.
And in that, everybody read that article from Rory Whitwell in the week, where it was very, very damaging for John Murta. John Murta seemingly lost us Jude Bellingham, or at least played a role in it anyway. We all know Jude Bellingham came to United training ground on Old Trafford to meet Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and the coaching staff and get a bit of a tour. But one of Solskjaer's plan was at the end of the meeting was to introduce him to Alex Ferguson, which is obviously a great plan. But Ferguson shook hands with Bellingham and then was interrupted by John Murta, who took him out and done a tour of the stadium. And Ferguson was furious that he was basically sidelined by John Murta and not allowed to speak to this young prospect who United were trying to sign. Absolutely outrageous. There's a few other things in the article that was concerned about Murta as well. I think he had a huge falling out with Nicky Butt in the canteen. It meant one of the worst things about it, Nicky Butt obviously had to leave then because he couldn't become technical director alongside Murta because of their relationship. So the job went to Fletcher and Butt handed in his notice. But the reason that John Murta got the job as football director is, you know, it's absolutely disgraceful because Joe Glazer is a fan of him, and as is Ed Woodward, and he was going to leave and go to Inter Miami. He's going to get a job there. So in order to keep him, they gave him a promotion and made him football director, despite interviewing several external candidates who were more fitting for the role, in my opinion. They gave him the one of the most important roles at the club just to convince him to stay. This club is just run by a bunch of clowns, isn't it?
Oh, it's a joke. Like, if you're wanting to leave, like, you let them go. You do not give them a powerful role like that where it's really important for the team's long-term and short-term future. Both the short-term importance, but also the long-term future. You give it to somebody that actually knows what they're doing. They really got it wrong. And so many people praised some of the signings he made, like calling it a Myrtle madness. I always laughed at that phrase. It made me laugh. Like, He's only at Man United because he worked under David Moyes at Everton. Like, he came to Man United at the same time David Moyes did. I've never thought of John Murtough as important. People say, oh, he's done great for the women's team. Okay, that's fine. I've got no issue with that. Like, I watch the women's team now and again. But in terms of like, the men's team, he's not significantly doing anything for them. If he's been great for the women's team, put him in a role with the women's team. That's no disrespect to the women's team. I'm saying if he's done great for them in that way, then put him there and he can solely lead that charge. In terms of the men's team, he's taken that nowhere in terms of an important position. And if he didn't want to be here in the first place, they should never have gave him that role. They should never have given him that role.
Yeah, and I really want Ineos to move him on. Ineos need to move him on, in my opinion. They apparently haven't made their minds up about that. But if they read that article, they might make up their minds. He is not qualified for that job, and the reason he was given the job was not on merit. And if he cost us Jude Bellingham through his own arrogance, then that's even worse. We could have had
the best player in the world. Like, in my opinion, Jude Bellingham right now is the best player in world football. We could have had the best player in world football for who knows how long, and we lost that. I understand him going to Dortmund, no problem. I still would have, at least before Madrid came calling, I would have tried at the gun quickly to stop him. I'd be like, fine, go to Dortmund, no problem. But then make that offer. Be like, well, this is what we want for Jude Bellingham. We're willing to give you Sancho back as well as a way to like show we're serious about Jude Bellingham. We'll give you Sancho back. Sancho plus whatever much you want. We'll do that, get Jude in. And we lost out massively on Jude.
Yeah. Stupidly. I think the time to get him was when he was leaving Birmingham. Once he was leaving Dortmund and had the choice of Real Madrid, he was always going to go there, really, I feel. Yeah. And United didn't really have a chance.
I generally think he'll win the Ballon d'Or at Madrid as well.
Probably this season or whenever, the next opportunity, because his goal record at Madrid is phenomenal for a midfielder. Mm-hmm. We're all expecting Ineos to revamp the whole sporting structure at the club and bring in a lot of new people. But like you said earlier, Ten Hag has done nothing to convince us that he should be part of this new project. And I totally agree with you when you say that. He just looks like a man who's totally devoid of ideas now, doesn't know what to do. And United are playing the same way every week and not producing any goals or any results. Did you see him after the thumping at home to Bournemouth, where he was, for as soon as the final whistle went, he just stared into space for about 10 or 15 seconds before he moved again. He just looked like a guy who was just lost out there. If Radcliffe and Brailsford are watching United at the moment, they're not going to be convinced by him at all. And they'll probably move him on. I mean, and like I've said time and time again, when new people take over a football club, they very, very rarely keep the manager from the previous regime. They always bring in their own man, don't they?
Yeah, I think they'd be willing to give Ten Hag a chance. I think they would. But they will probably say to him, look, you have between now and the end of the season. If we don't see any convincing change, then we have somebody in mind that we think is the right man for the job. We will bring this man in. We will relieve you of your duties. I think he has that chance, but it's like, I don't know, 25% chance. I don't think he's guaranteed to keep his job. And I think even he'll admit that himself if he got asked the question. But if he is to stay, we really need to see change and positive change quickly. Otherwise, I can see why Ratcliffe and Brailsford and whoever they bring in, like for other key roles that are on his side, I wouldn't be surprised if they go, right, who are we going to get as a manager? Say it's Graham Potter. I'm not a particular fan of Graham Potter, but if he comes in, I understand because they've lined him up. But immediately, you know, if Graham Potter comes in, they are going to work so damn well with him to make sure that he does not fail. Or if anything, he doesn't fail quickly, he'll be given that long-term chance that he's trying to do better with what's available, plus support him financially and structurally. Ten Hag, I think, will get that chance only if he can turn things around. If he can't do it, he is going.
The fact that we're being linked with Dan Ashworth and Potter tells me that Ineos are thinking about matching them up again, because they were together at Brighton and that could be their long-term plan. I'm with you. I'm not convinced by Potter as a manager, but if he comes in under Ineos, he should definitely have a real competent structure behind him and give him the best possible opportunity to succeed. But, you know, I know Chelsea are an absolute basket case of a club, and he struggled there in his short time in charge. But United are quite similar in that aspect, and the pressure. United is an absolute beast of a football club, with so millions of fans around the world and so much scrutiny on you. Do you think the job would be too big for Potter, even if he did have the structure around him?
I think initially it could well be the case, but I think what's good for Potter though is his teams do create a lot of chances, and they do when they are organised pretty well, it's just that can you get the players to actually convert those chances and can they be effective? I think one thing that he will do though when he gets the job, if he did get the job, with a structure in place that is effective, he will say, right, these players X, Y, Z have to go. They're not going to fit my team and they're not going to ensure us going forward will be a positive. But we can replace these players effectively. I think that's something that we have to do, is we need to get the right way of recruitment and how we identify players as well is important, because we can't keep wasting. We can spend big money, but we have to spend big money where it actually does work, not wasting it on players who aren't going to deliver. We need to be spent in the right way going forward consistently. And I think Potter could do that, but I do think the pressure would definitely be head over heels so much more than Chelsea.
Yeah, my worry would be if we had hit a bad run of form, then not only the fans, but the players would be thinking, looking at his record and thinking, yeah, he's not good enough. Well, what has he won? What has he done in the game? I think at a club like United, you need to have a track record of winning trophies. When things start to go wrong, then you can point to that record and say, I've done this, this, and this, so the club should believe in me and the players should believe in me. But when you don't have a track record, then it's more difficult to convince people that you're the right man. You know where I'm coming from?
If he was brought in to be like the start of like the Ineos project, where they're saying like, well, we can have Potter for like 2 or 3 years where he will get like the team in a good shape, where he gets like the right team built. But then they actually say, actually, maybe we do need to go and step up a little bit in terms of managerial quality. I think the fans would actually probably be actually okay with that. Not saying, oh, great, it's another man losing their job. But we're actually seeing, hold on, he's actually got us in a good position where the squad's been cleansed from who shouldn't be here. He's brought in players that are actually going to work under this manager and whoever follows him up. But it's also going to say, we're going to be so organised that we're actually going to be good going forward, but also good at the back, where the players actually work consistently well. I think that would be fine, not just with myself, I think the majority of our fan base would be okay with that. Because if anything, he has done that really well for Brighton, but they've not been great recently. But when you look at how they've went going forward, Graham Potter was definitely the start of all that. And De Servi's just been able to just add to it a little bit more extra flair and a little bit more like attacking flair. But Potter gave him that defensive like solidity, and I think that's something that we could get, and I'd be all right with that.
Yeah, and if Graham Potter didn't work out or he didn't take us to a title, we could bring in an upgrade in terms of the coach, and he could work with the same players and with a few additions. If any of us have a proper structure in place, which I expect them to, you know, that's what we want. We want to get the position where we can move the coach on, replace him, and it doesn't change very much, where the next coach then is absolutely suited to the players we already have, and we don't have to do a rebuild every time we change managers. That's vital to me.
Yeah, we can finally get away from a rebuild to just saying we're just adding to what's already there. The rebuild's done. This is just strengthening this, like the current squad, that's going to say we have a squad there that's regularly competing. Now we're going to add to this to make it a squad that's actually going to go and eventually we're going to go and now win the big one. We're now going to go and win the big one with these 2 or 3 players who are just like that extra little spicy ingredients.
Yeah, but I fear that we've got a few more months of pain to go through before we get to the beginning of that point. So we'll wrap it up there for today. If everyone could please smash a like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and get more of your comments in. And I would like to wish you a happy Christmas, Reese.
And I would like to wish you the exact same. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Even though it won't be a happy Christmas for Manchester United fans, but if we ignore the football, then we can enjoy our Christmas. So I'll definitely have you back on the show again in the new year then, Reese.
Oh, I'd love that. Thank you. It'd be a pleasure. It'd been a good laugh today. I appreciate you having me on. After a couple of years, it's been really enjoyable. Thank you. And the hard conversations are actually the ones I probably enjoy best, because the harder ones you get to go into a little bit things a little bit more depth. And if it was just a win, then it's that's an enjoyable conversation, but if it's like something that's really damning but important to get through, I feel like you can just have a little bit more in-depth and just a solid discussion. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah, when you lose, you're analysing more. When you win, you're just kind of celebrating, aren't you? And just kind of reveling in it.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing as well.
Yeah, and these conversations when you lose are like therapy as well, aren't they?
Yeah, especially with people you can just like sit back and just say like, we're not going to like bullshit our way towards it. We're just going to say exactly what's on our mind, exactly what we can see and what we're feeling. But also we're just going to be open and honest. And I feel like that's the best conversation you can have when it's coming about football or anything in general, is just being open and honest. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully the podcast in the near future will be a bit more upbeat, because it feels like a long time since I had an upbeat podcast. But anyway, as I see you in the new year, Reece, I'll have a good one.
And you, thank you very much.